guys, and otherwise we were just friends. Now tell me that you feel the same.
Hey, good afternoon, listeners of 91.3. That was the extremely short version of Waiting for you, of those of you who are enjoying that song. But right now, I got a special treat for you, the drive home, or anybody listening, because I'm going to do a brief interview with Joey Coco Diaz. He's in town doing some comedy, and we're going to chat with him because he has an interesting backstory. So maybe the interview, hopefully the interview will be interesting. You know, for you that have been following my interviews, I have an unorthodox interview style. You know, like an unorthodox batting style, or like a unorthodox pitching delivery, like Dan Quisenberry from the Royals, if you guys remember him from the 80s. You know, he went submarine, and a lot of, you know, pitching coaches are like, don't pitch like that because it's bad for your arm, but yet it worked for him. Because he had quite a few saves, if you remember that. So, yeah, he will be, not to pump up next week, but next week on the show, I'll be, next Thursday, I'm going to be interviewing podcaster, the most downloaded podcaster, Adam Carolla. So that's something to look for. Mark your calendars, unless you're driving. Mark your Google calendars on your phone, because who uses a regular calendar anymore? Unless you're driving. In which case, keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel. But, yeah, if you're looking for something to do tonight, because you lived through that horrible, horrible blizzard of 2014, I think I stuck an extra zero there. That's okay. The polar vortex that's thawing now because it's like 50 degrees outside. And you need something to do. Maybe your girlfriend wants to cuddle and watch Lifetime, but that sounds horrible. So you got to convince her to leave the house, and you want to go see Diaz, Joey Diaz, because he is hilarious. He has he's kind of like tells stories, that kind of thing. But I don't think you'll regret it. He's lived an interesting life, which I feel is important to for comedy, because you know you have to live a life worth comedy on before you know you can make comedy. I don't know. Does that make any sense? Maybe. Maybe. I don't think it has to. Because you just go see him. Take my word for it. I don't think I've ever steered you wrong. I'm like giving out, it's like giving out stock tips. Because if you were listening yesterday to the show, I reviewed, I was talking about Wolf of Wall Street, which I saw. And that's a pretty good movie. But don't... you know, don't, like I said, don't go see that. Go see some live comedy. It's like seeing a play. It's interactive. Well, it's not really interactive because you just sit there and don't say anything. You just listen, which is great. But what, sometimes when you sleep on a movie, you have second thoughts on it. And I don't know. I don't know if I have any second thoughts about Wolf of Wall Street. I did go home and I did some extracurricular reading on it, because I do my research after I talk about stuff. That's my style. I don't want to be too informed when I spew stuff over the airwaves, because that doesn't make any sense to me, that's for sure. But actually, the character that Jonah Hill played, they had to change his name because his family threatened Danny. The actual character that Jonah plays, his name was Danny Paul Roche, I believe, but they couldn't use his name because he threatened to sue, and he actually did some reading on him. He spent 36, I think 39 months in jail, as opposed to the guy who the movie was based on, Jordan Belfort. He only spent 22 months in jail. So, and I believe they're probably not friends anymore because the way things went down. Because, you can't really believe the movie because that's just Jordan's point of view. So, he gets little zingers in there. I think he kind of subtly implies that that guy might have been the character that Jonah plays might have been gay, because there's a scene there that just kind of they interject in the middle of the movie where in his one house, Jordan's house, there was a gay butler, and he was having a gay party, and he came home, and then some money was missing. So that's, like, that's the one movie. Oh, I believe that's Joey. Let's see. Let's check on that. Hello? Yes. Good. Hang on 1 second for me, Joey, while I put you on the air. Okay. Okay, that is Joey Diaz, and let's get him on the air and get this interview going. All right, Joey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here with you.
Great. All right, well, you're on the air.
Let's do it, buddy. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I am fantastic. How's things? How was your first show last night?
The first show was good. I was just working on some kinks, but I'm ready for tonight, and I'm excited. You know, I'm a big fan of Buffalo. I've been coming up here since like 82 on a social tip. Not even, I didn't start coming up here to do comedy until like 97.
And really?
And I would go to North Tonawanda. I started at the Funny Bone in Buffalo. They were the first ones that had a dirty night on Saturdays at 11. So I would come here and twice or three times a year. And then when that closed down, I started going to Rob's place over at, what's the name of that place?
Rob's.
North Tonawanda.
Yeah.
And that was always a great little club. You know, I went there for a few years, and then I moved to L.A., and everything was, starting all over, so I lost contact, and I kept in touch with people up here, and a couple of years ago, I played Nietzsche, and I realized I had to come back, and all of a sudden, now Helium's got a club, and we're doing our thing, so I'm here, and I'm really excited to be here. Like I said before, anybody can come to Buffalo in July, come the first week of January. That's when the party's really starting up here, so I'm here.
Yeah, great. I'm looking forward to seeing you. Yeah, I mean, the crowd's great. We like to drink. And did you go out last night, or did you just...
No, I had to do radio this morning. So when I'm out of town, you know, when I'm in town, when I travel, for me, this is like I get to relax. I get to look at my material. You know, I'm 50. My wife just had a baby. You know, I'm doing comedy. I got the podcast 2 days a week. So, it's busy. So when I come on the road, it's basically to look at my material and talk to the people I've made friends with on Twitter. And
oh, right.
So it's great.
It's like a vacation, sort of.
Yeah, it's like a working vacation. But, I mean, you know, this year I'm going to a lot less places, but I'm going to the places where I really want to go to, you know. When I love playing, you know, I love North Carolina. I love Nashville. But those places are the Bible Belt. You know, I'm R-rated plus. I go up there, and after 20 minutes, they remember they're Christians. In Buffalo, there ain't no Christians. You know, they just want. You know, this is a real town. This is a real industrial city. I was walking around before, and I was looking at the buildings. I'm like, this is the last of America. This is it. So these people have that blue collar mentality. So I got to go out there and throw heat. You know.
Right. You deliver. Well, yeah, we got buildings by Frank Lloyd Wright. I mean, I don't know if you're into architecture or anything, but. Downtown.
So yeah, no, it's amazing. I'm very excited to be here. So,
and yeah, well, because you have a great backstory. Well, yeah, I mean, pretty interesting. Not a lot of, I mean, you spent some time in prison.
Yeah.
And that's where you got your start, which seems like a really like a great, like, you know, they say even like starting open mics at Boston is rough, but I feel like starting in prison must be as rough as it gets, right?
Yeah. But I didn't really know what I was doing. You know, I've always been a neighborhood guy that sits outside the deli with eight guys and you crack jokes and people walk by and you go, look at that guy with the limp. You know, it's like, look at that guy with the, look at the shape of that guy. Look at that poor bastard, you know. And, you know, when I got locked up, I was 25. I didn't really know anything about anything. I mean, I was doomed for prison. I mean, with the way I was living my life, you know, I knew that going in. I did something with it. So I'm here 20-something years later, and it feels great, you know. Just to come up here and to be able to headline and talk with people after the show and all that stuff, that fills all those voids for me, you know. I mean, it really does. And like I said, especially Buffalo, where I can say whatever the hell I want, and nobody writes a letter after I leave if they get insulted. I mean, you know, the biggest insult is that they don't have a stadium. You know what I'm saying? Like for the Buffalo Bison Fest. That's what I would be pissed off about. They're the number one team in AAA for attendance, and they still don't have a new stadium and a major league team. So Buffalo focuses on what's important. They don't focus on some fat ex-felon coming to town with a dirty mouth. They'll come down, they'll drink some beers, they'll smoke some dope, and they'll giggle, and they'll go home, and they'll take it for what it is. You know, I go to someplace else, like crack a joke about doing blow with my cat. The next thing you know, they're calling the services on me or something like that. So,
have you had a lot of problems like that? Like people that, you know, because some bookers will book you even though they know what you're all about and then be upset afterwards after what you say? Like,
No, I get problems like when I go to a club and they don't put a warning label on. That gets me a little pissed off because people don't know. A lot of people go to a movie theater and it's closed and they'll go, all right, let's go to the movies. And they walk in and bump into me, you know. And I don't expect people to like what I'm talking about, but they do, you know, and the people that do come out, you know, I talk about some edgy stuff that people don't want to hear about, and some people do, so.
Right, well, you're like, I was mentioning before, you know, talking about, like, you lived a life, like, I think you did it the right way, though, because, you know, when you start out, you didn't start out at 18. Like, when you start at 18, you haven't really done anything with your life, you know, what can you make, you know, like, you have to live a life worth commenting on to be funny, I feel like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and, no, you have to do something. But I see a lot of young guys, and they're really good because they're really good writers. But I think once you put your life into your stand-up and start talking about your adventures, that's what happened with me. I've been doing comedy on the road since, like, 98. Nobody ever talked to me. I did a podcast. I talked about mugging a hooker when I was a kid. And people write me emails telling me I inspire them. So you never know. You never know what. And I always knew that if people knew my backstory, they'd get on board. It's like 24/7 when you watch those boxing shows and you get to see that the guy has kids. I always knew that once people got to realize I just wasn't a regular comedian that got on stage and cracked jokes, that I would get some love. And I did from the podcast, because all I do on the podcast is go on there and tell stories about growing up, and I have my friends call up. And it's interesting stuff. I like what's going on. I really am enjoying what's going on, you know. My wife doesn't want me to travel as much because of the baby, but this is the time for me to do it. I'm never going to have this again, you know. I'm never really going to have this time in my life again, so I want to get out there, you know. And this year, like I said, she just turned a year old on Wednesday. That's why I didn't fly in on Wednesday night. And I want to be around with her more, but I also want to travel and keep releasing CDs and, you know, doing movies. I like all this stuff. This is beautiful. And just the fact that it started when I was in prison just even tastes better, you know?
Oh, right. Yeah, you can definitely appreciate it more. And well, you know, Bob Newhart, once your kids get older, maybe you can go on the road with, like, I believe he took his kids on the road with him, and they, you know, they became very well adjusted. They're not even comedians or anything.
Well, listen, you got to show your kids life, you know, and I don't know how much life I want to teach my. I think my parents taught me a little bit too. They showed me a little bit too much life in the beginning because you know, this is why I'm the way I turned out the way I am in a way. So you have to be careful how much you show them at an early age. But I want them to see. I want my daughter to see everything. You know, it just takes time. I don't know if I want her on the road yet. She's a year old. I don't want to be janking her in planes. But I've already told my wife in a few years, God, you know, willing, I have to take her sometimes. I'm going to have to take her because she's not going to want to stay at home, you know.
Yeah, or get a bus, like maybe a big bus tour, like you and Joe Rogan, and some other guys, and just hit the country.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good, too.
Because do you have your own podcast, or you're doing...
Yes, I have the Church of What's Happening Now, which I do with the Flying Jew. And that's been going on for about a year and a half, and it's working out. The numbers are great. You know, we have sponsors. I do it religiously on Mondays and Wednesdays, and then I do the other ones, from Mark Maron to Joe's to, you know.
Right, and Joe's great. I mean, he's been helping get the word. Like, that's how I learned about you, through Joe.
I mean, it's been a great adventure. I'm not going to lie to you, Jason. I never thought I would see this.
This level of success? Or?
Yeah, this level of anything. I went to L.A. to kill time. I was 30-something years old. I was in a war with my ex-wife over a child. It was painful, and I said, you know what? I could stay. If I stay here, I'm going to end up stabbing these motherfuckers. But if I move on and you know, go for this. I'll be okay. And that's exactly what I did. And I just wanted to kill time. I was like Richard Gere in Officer and a Gentleman. Have you ever seen that movie when he goes, you know, I got nowhere else to go? I had nowhere else to go. That's the bottom line. And I stuck it out, and I did some movies. I was very fortunate, you know, early on. And that gave me a little bit of hope. And I stuck it out, and here I am. And I got a movie with De Niro in the movie theaters, which I could lie to you and tell you a thousand stories. I never dreamed of doing movies with De Niro. I thought I would stay in L.A. for a couple of years, maybe OD, and that was that. But I wanted to give it a shot, you know. I really wanted to give it a shot from my heart. You know, when you hear people telling you you don't have a chance, you're too dirty, you're too old, nobody's going to hire you for movies, and then little by little, you know, I started doing little things, and that's what life is all about, to prove them wrong. I'm an underdog, brother.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm an underdog, and I love it. And I love it. I love it that nobody wants to sign me as an agent. You know, when I did Grudge Match, when I talked to, I had him on the podcast, Peter Siegel, who I had worked with before in The Longest Yard, and he said they couldn't find somebody for that role when he brought me up. That the whole room was like, ah, we don't know. Well, you know what? You know, I put a feather in his cap because I did a good job. I knew my lines. And I'm a hard sell. Everybody never looks at me. I'm like the ugly girl at the prom. I'm like the fat, ugly girl at the dance. No offense, no fat, ugly girls. You know, I'm a fat, ugly guy. So
they know
I understand what you're going through. But I've never been the top runner. So when I get, you know, The Longest Yard, they weren't going to give me The Longest Yard. I had to go make a tape. I went to, like, a Play It Again Sports and bought a bunch of old material and put it on and made a tape with my stomach hanging out. And that's how they hired me. I go after things. You know, you don't have time. I've been to prison. I lost my mother at an early age. And we have this thing in this country now that everybody wants everything so easy, you know. You know, you're fat, right? When you're fat, what do? You push your way, you push yourself away from the table and you do jumping jacks. That's it. That's it. But in this country, no. We got to do everything else. We got to do the shaker. We got to walk for 20 minutes, 3 days. You know, it's always a lie to cut through the chase. But the bottom line is, if you put the work in, you know, I get up at 4 a.m. and do a podcast twice. The other 3 days, I get up and just write crazy stuff on Twitter, you know, scratch your balls and sniff your fingers, God's coming, whatever. But I'm telling my, I tell the people on Twitter the same thing I'm telling myself in my head, that get out there and stab somebody. Today's the best day of your life, you know, and you're sitting there like a moron.
Right, metaphorically, so, you mean, don't.
Yeah, it's true. You know, you said, I sat there when I was 25 confused. And the answer was right in front of me. You know, we have iTunes and iPhones, but nobody goes to them. You know, nobody goes to I for the answer. You know, the answer is in you, what you're going to do with your life. And when I got out of prison, I had nothing. You know, when you go to prison, they tell you that on the way out to do disability papers, so you can have disability, so you get a check, $600 a month, because they tell you you're disabled. That's what they tell you when you come out of prison.
Really?
So if 60% of the people do that, what's their level of success? You know, there's no rehabilitation in prison. That's a lie, brother. There's no rehabilitation 101 or 102. Rehabilitation starts in your head. And you know what you're going to do. And don't get me wrong, man, but after I got out of prison, I just stopped doing blow 6 or 7 years ago. This is why now I'm becoming, you know, I'm getting people to come see me and stuff, because for years I was partying, you know, and so I'm really happy how everything turned out, and I'm really happy I'm in Buffalo, man.
Yeah, you probably should make a movie of your life, or write a book sometime.
Maybe, yeah, well, right now, as I was talking to you, I was making some notes in my little book there just before I called you, so this is what happens. I work on it every day, and that's where I'm at, brother. You know, every day I do a little something, and it helps.
Yeah, I mean, you looked inwards. You didn't try to blame other people for your problems, and then bam.
No. Nobody put a gun to my head to do drugs, you know. Nobody did. I did them myself. And, you know, that's what I learned. When I went to prison, that was the number one lesson I learned. It was that I had to claim responsibility. The judge would have probably given me 90 days and a halfway out if I would have claimed responsibility, but I kept telling him I didn't do nothing. But that responsibility I claimed changed my life forever. Because now I claim responsibility for everything. If somebody shoots a Puerto Rican in Seattle and I'm in New York, I claim responsibility. You know, just to make my life go a little easier. You know, comics get off stage, and what do they tell you? The audience sucks, the microphone sucks. No, maybe you suck. You know, last night they were laughing, but I didn't have the set I wanted to have. You know, and if somebody would came up to me and said, Joe, we've seen you before, you sucked, I would agree with them, you know. So today I had to put my P's in order. I'm going to go out there and tackle Buffalo like a soldier.
Right. Well, you know, it takes a day to get a handle on the city. I mean, you probably haven't been here for a while, and we just got out of a blizzard. So, you know, it takes a day to adjust.
Yeah, so I'm ready today, but I'm happy you got me on, and I'm happy you thought of me, you know.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm a big, you know, I'm doing my thing, and I love comedy, and you're like nothing's more real than, you know, that's where comedy's going. It's not just, you know, joke setup. Punchline anymore. It's like, you know, storytelling, and you can't get more original than real stories that happen to you. And, you know, no one can rip you off because no one else mugged a hooker when they were a young lad.
No.
That's you. So
I still talk to those guys who I mugged the hooker with, and we giggle every time I bring it up. We're like, oh my God, how crazy was that?
Right.
But,
and I mean,
yeah,
you're a good guy.
Where it's going. It's been pretty interesting, and, I know. I think that this goes up for a lot of college kids, and they get to read it. It's so weird, man. I went to college, and I was doing well. The time, you know, looking back, you think you have it, but you're really so confused and scared. You're just doing because they tell you to go to college, you know, and they tell you that this is. And once you get to college, your mind gets a little freer, and you're like, you know what? I can do without this. I'm going to take a chance. Columbus did. And the next thing you know, here you are on the stage in Buffalo on a Friday night, January 9th. 2014, so it's really interesting, man.
Did you have a job? Did you get any kind, like, did they try to counsel you in prison, or did you have a job or anything like that?
Yeah, you're in some group, and they group, and everybody does this, and drugs, and this, and once I got out, man, I was still buck wild, and I got out in 88, I got out in 89, I didn't get on stage until 91. That's how scared I was. I don't want the people at home to think that I went right from the prison to the comedy club. I'm like, hey, no. It took me 2 years. I shit my pants for 2 years, like anybody else would do, like a normal 20-year-old would do. You're taking a big leap of faith. But once I jumped in, it was all over. I knew I didn't want to be married anymore. I knew I didn't want a day job no more. I knew I didn't even want responsibility. I just wanted to get in the car, roll joints, and drive and do jokes. And guess what? That's exactly what I did. I had the heart. It took me 4 more years after I tried it. I mean, I fooled around with it and got on stage. But it took me 4 years to buy a car, tell all my creditors to go jump in a lake. They weren't getting a dime from me. And I just went for it. I lived under the radar for like 6 or 7 years.
Right. Well, that's funny, though, because it's like even you were like, it shows you how tough comedy is, though, because what your first open mic probably still scared you, like your first open mic outside of prison was still scary, and you were compared to prison, right?
Yeah, yeah. But in prison, I was like home. I was with a bunch of hoodlums that I've been around all my life. So on Wednesdays or Thursdays, it was like a movie night, and they had one of those shitty projectors, and the projector would always break. So while they were editing the movie back with, you know, they were putting the film back together with a glue thing, and you know, here I was cracking jokes to hold them together for 10 minutes. I didn't even know I was cracking jokes. I was talking about the prison and the food and the counselors and this invict, you know, and that invict. So that's how it really started, you know.
Yeah, it's great. And now you're breaking it. You're doing movies with, like, you were in the Grudge match with Sylvester Stallone, and did you hang out with him, or?
No, I really was on the De Niro side of it. So I was all on the De Niro side of it. I mean,
probably the better side to be on.
Yeah, I think Sylvester and those guys
down there.
But by the time I got down there, they were done shooting all those big scenes. They were shooting all the smaller scenes. So I just shot with those guys. And I'm shooting Marin by the end of the month, the show Marin. I shot Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That aired already. So listen, man, you look at these things and you're like, wow, I never, like, when I got to L.A., I'm not going to lie to you, I always thought that if I would be an extra in a movie, that was good enough for me. Like, if I just walked across a scene, that would have been good enough for me. You know, so you never know. You just really never know, as long as you stick with something, where this savage could turn out, you know.
Definitely. That's, well, you do need a little bit of talent, though, which you have.
Balls and a lot of a lot of balls and a little bit of talent will get you a lot of places.
Well, yeah, that.
And then you got to work on the talent. That'll take you for a while. Then you got to work on the talent, develop other things, and that'll take you for a while. Then you know, every 3 years you got to evolve. You know, so if you don't evolve, you stay in one place.
You mean like as a person or like in comedy or in general?
Comedy, as a person, as a human, you have to evolve, man. You know, every couple of years you have to evolve just to challenge yourself.
I agree. Yeah, definitely. You should. Well, you know, I think what once a year you're basically a new person because all the cells in your body have regenerated, so you're totally different. So you should be in a better. You should be different. You should look at things differently. I feel like totally different perspective on things.
Yeah.
Well, man, it was. You just hanging out in your hotel room, waiting for the preparing.
That's
for the show.
That's it. I'm gonna ride a little bit. I'm gonna go eat dinner. I'm gonna throw some weights around, and they're gonna pick me up at 7:30, and we're gonna do two shows.
Nice.
That's it, man.
I really appreciate you calling. It was nice talking to you.
I appreciate you having me, brother. I'm sorry I came in late yesterday and we couldn't do yesterday and we got to talk today.
Oh.
So I'm happy that you're going to do something with this and some people listen to this and hopefully they'll get something out of it. I do the church podcast. It's on iTunes Mondays and Wednesdays at 6 a.m. on Ustream. And
yes.
It's posted maybe an hour after I finish. So if you're interested, listen to the podcast, man.
Definitely. And you're on Twitter. Is it just Joey Diaz?
It's Matt Flavor on Twitter. I'm Joey Diaz on Facebook. And I'm usually on the Rogan podcast once every 6 weeks.
So. Yes, you're very good on that's just a good two-hour conversation there. Yeah, and like I told people, there's, you know, the blizzard just cleared. So hopefully everyone will come out tonight and tomorrow and catch one of your shows.
Amen. Thank you for having me. All right, have a great weekend and stay beautiful.
Thanks, man. All right.
All right, buddy.
Bye. There you go. That was inspiring. It was Joey Mad Flavor, or is it? I don't know. He's got a couple nicknames now. Now I'm confused. I know it's Joey Coco Diaz, but he's known as Mad Flavor, part of the Death Squad unit under Joe. Well, I wouldn't say he's under Joe Rogan, but I mean that group of comedians like him and Ari Shareef, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, who's also coming to town. To tell some jokes. And that was an interesting conversation. So like I said, you should, he should write a memoir, not stupid Jordan Belfort about ripping people off on Wall Street like thousands of other guys have done and had the decorum not to write about it and try to make a movie about it because they're egomaniacs. He was in jail for allegedly kidnapping, aggravated kidnapping, I believe was the charge. I didn't ask him if he was guilty of that. But, I forget the story behind that. I'm sure it was probably on Joe Rogan's podcast, so we didn't need to reset that, as they say in radio, as I didn't reset how I was talking to Joey Diaz. But no, I mean, you could just tell he's really, he's a good guy. And I don't know how he saw me. I mean, he just probably assumed through my voice that I'm beautiful, which is true. And I will stay beautiful. Thanks, Joey. And, but no, he's proof that you can do anything that you basically set your mind to it. Don't make excuses. You know, things happen. I mean, for the most part. I mean, I guess if you're in Somalia and you're a child soldier, you could probably use that as an excuse until, like, you know, until your mid-20s. You'd be like, man, you know, if you do something messed up, you're like, hey, you know, I was a child soldier at 10. Because I just saw a book, Ishmael something about being his days as a child soldier, and now he wrote a book about it, and he seems well-adjusted. So I think there's hope for anybody, pretty much. I think anybody can be rehabilitated and, you know, go after your dreams. And look, he's living the life. He never thought he would live this life of having success and doing comedy, and he probably has a beautiful wife, and he just had a daughter. I'm sure she's beautiful. Wow, this turned into an uplifting thing. I hope you all, if you're driving home, you're all uplifted as you're sitting in rush hour. It's probably really not rush hour. And that's another note. If you're in Buffalo rush hour traffic, be thankful because it's really not rush hour. You know, if you've ever been to another city like San Francisco or L.A. or even Chicago, now that's rush hour. Rush hour here is like you're still moving and you're delayed 20 minutes. Ooh, what is that? Or you could have been in New Jersey thanks to Chris Christie, And he would have, you would have been jammed up for God knows how long. Traffic jams, right? Turns out Chris Christie's a bully. Who knew? A big fat guy from New Jersey's a bully. That's odd, right? Where did that come from? Oh, no, I mean, he fired his top. So his top aide had to jump on the sword for that one. But I think we all know where that's coming from. And do I think less of him? No. Who wouldn't do the same? You have the power to get back at people that you have a grudge against or that did something to you. You wouldn't do it? Like I said, I think that's in everyone. Humans are, you know, we all have a despicable side. Just goes back to Wolf of Wall Street. He started out as a normal person, but like money corrupted him. He didn't even want to, you know, he was sitting down to lunch as a second day broker and bam, he didn't even want to have a cocktail during lunch. He was drinking water and then it turned into, you know, smash cut 10 years later, he's having six cocktails for lunch and washing it down with Quaaludes, which is I think he said in the movie those don't exist anymore. What are those, like downers? Who does Quaaludes anymore? But yeah, you know, Martin Scorsese is just obsessed with, he likes movies that are drug-addled and not too, or like I seen, there's that one scene of violence. You can't have a Martin Scorsese film without one scene of violence where they start punching the butler and blood flies. And then after that, it's pretty violent free, or except for, I think Jonah Hill gets punched out. Other than that, it's all just drug usage and ripping people off. And of course you don't really see, you know, I mean, you can't go into the movie of the devastation that Jordan caused, but apparently, I mean, a lot of people, as I was saying before Joey called, I think he's still in debt. He still owes the government $110 million that he's supposed to pay in restitution to all the people that he ripped off. So he's behind on that. And I don't know what they're doing to, he's probably never going to make that much again unless he goes and rips off a new set of people, which would be quite the Ponzi scheme. So I don't think, and he allegedly, he got paid $1 million for the book, for the movie rights to his book. And people don't know what happened to that, but on his website, he tries to say that the government wanted 50%, but he demanded that they take 100%, which sounds like a self-agendizing agenda. Yeah, whatever. It sounds like grandstanding. Like, basically, he probably didn't give them 100%, and this, you know, he's just whatever. That part in the brain that where you feel bad about doing bad stuff to other people just disintegrated or fell apart because he loves money. And, you know, I believe that could probably happen to a lot of us. I think eventually most of us would probably pull out of it, and I think he just never did. And that's why. But is it movie worthy? I don't know. I mean, the movie is entertaining, don't get me wrong. But, you know, that's for, it's not the movie of the year, let's put it that way. In my opinion as an expert movie reviewer, as I've taken several correspondence courses in movie reviewing. All right. Well, I'm going to go prepare for my, you know what? And Joey did not invite me to the show either. I don't know what that means. You know, just professional, they're like, oh, I hope you come to the show. But maybe he feels like it'll be a sellout without me. Or he's just, I don't know. He just doesn't want me at the show. He doesn't really, he secretly hates me. It's hard to say. But I'm going to a show anyway, even though he didn't invite me. He can't stop me, can he? I don't think so. So, and I'm still allowed at the club, as far as I know. So I'm going to be there. And maybe I'll see you there. I'll see all these fine listeners there. And, or like I said, and next Thursday, another great interview. Because my interview skills can only go up, right? I mean, can't get worse. That would be aggression. But yeah, next week I'll be talking to Adam Carolla, who's doing a live podcast here sometime in the future. Sometime in February, I think. But I'll be speaking to him next week, and that should be interesting. I have a 15-minute phoner, according to his guy. So you can look forward to 15 minutes of, and I feel like Adam will probably do most of the talking because that's his thing. So that should be worth listening to, right? Let's get back to some music. if I still have a show next week. How about Bad Books? No. Oh, YOLO Tango and Ohm. I like that song. Let's see if we can get that to play. Hopefully. Let's see how that works out for me.